As we have often said, the practice of Zen is continually finding out what practice really is. And that means recognizing if one has an idea of what practice is. This is not different from having an idea of who you are or what the world is all about. But if one is trying to practice Zen, it is important to identify if one has any idea at all about what the practice of Zen is. And if so, that has to be let go of. You can't let go of it by looking at it and doing something with it. That's to say, you can't let go of any idea you have of yourself or the world or any erroneous idea or anything of that sort by looking at it, picking it up, and doing something with it, putting a line through it, throwing it away, attaching a balloon to it and letting it float off into the sky, as some people have suggested for things about the mind and so on. Paradoxically, the practice of Zen is very different. And the practice of Zen being very different is really because the practice of life is different from all the things that people substitute for what they think their life is. People have a hungry mind. We all have had a hungry mind, and we all have, to some degree, a hungry mind. We have hungry eyes that are pulled by things that we see, that initiate a train of associations in our mind of trying to explain or compare what we see with something else. We can't just let it be. Letting it be does not mean pushing it away, does not mean ignoring it, does not mean making it of little consequence. It means having nothing whatsoever to do with it. Allowing it to be there. Having no intention towards it whatsoever. That is to say, not giving rise to something, a mysterious thing in our being that has intention. Likewise, the ears are hungry. Sounds pull one around. There's a sound in the building, a sound outside, a thought in your head. I wonder what that is. And try to explain it, trying to do something with it. Let it be. Let it be. And likewise, the nose is hungry. Various smells that occur in the world have the same function, and likewise various tastes that may occur and various feelings that occur in the body or sensations in the skin, they have the same function. They draw us, and we have to do something with them. It is important to notice that and to barely notice it, to notice it that it is the nature of us human beings as living organisms, and particularly as human beings with consciousness that analyzes, that sets ourselves apart from various things like the sensations and so on, and makes of them objects, that is to say, separate from what we are. One needs to become very familiar with what it is to be a human being in order truly to practice Zen. So likewise, paradoxically, with any sensation, any feeling that comes into the mind, I've been working recently with a young man who has had anxiety. He's only a teenager, but he has had anxiety for particularly a certain reason. The reason, the initiating source, is past. And things that occur in the present are something that he has rationally realized they don't need to give rise to the anxiety. But that doesn't do it. That doesn't cut it. But recently what has happened for him is a most marvelous thing. He has found out that there is no need for a technique to deal with these things. because that is only making them real. It is giving them the reality that you would give to a stone blocking your driveway. But when you thoroughly look into them and see they have no substance, they are but floating, ghost-like, wraith-like sojourners through the field of consciousness. And he has found that the way of relating to them is just, as it were, sidling up to them and noticing that they're there with no objection, with no desire, with no grabbing them, with no pushing them away, and then learning the art of merely noticing them and letting them have whatever duration that they have or whatever fleeting quality that they have, and just letting them be. This takes art, particularly for a teenager, because during teen years, especially in our culture, the hungry mind is baited, encouraged, becomes the very substance of almost all conversation. Teenagers not to mind, adults also. There is an inertia, a momentum to this style of being in the world that we become used to, that is what life is. Thus it is difficult to orient oneself towards a way of relating to whatever the contents of our field, our sensory field, or our internal field, whatever their contents is, to orient differently. Naturally, when one learns that that is that is a necessity, it gives rise to the thoughts about for what purpose, or what do I get out of it, and how do I do it? One relates to it in the same way that one relates to anything else that one has encountered in the ordinary sensory world to which we have been enculturated. Very understandable, very touching, very human. As Nietzsche once entitled a book, Menschlich allzu menschlich, Human All Too Human. Yes, Human All Too Human. But there is something else that is possible for us human beings. Zen focuses and concentrates upon the cultivation of that and the learning how to live from this totally different orientation to one's life, which is an orientation that does not involve giving up anything. It involves being mindful to not let a puppeteer pull your strings, to not let the hungry mind, the hungry eyes, the hungry ears pull you around for no reason. You do not intend to follow that thought. You did not intend to analyze what that sight was or that sound that you had. You did not intend that. It is not functioning for any particular useful area of your being. This is what I mean by the automatism. This is what we mean by attachment. It's an involuntary process. Becoming acquainted, intimately acquainted, not as an idea. Anyone can do it as an idea. That's simple. It may be a start, but it's barely a start, because then it can get associated into some cosmology of human beings and an analysis of history with respect to the many manners of attachment and their consequences throughout human history, and it could be very, as we say, interesting. And from the viewpoint of the realization of what one is and who one is, and coming to the freedom and joy that is the possibility for all us beings, they are absolutely not only unimportant, but a profound obstruction. Zen Master Mumon, in one of the verses to one of the koan in the Mumon Khan, says that the effort to explain delays one's realization. Now, I speak this way because everyone needs daily, minute by minute sometimes, to reacquaint oneself with what the real nature of Zazen is. And to that end, I want to read something from Rinzai today. Rinzai, as many of you know, is a great Zen master, a really amazing Zen master. Amazing person, full of the integrity and authenticity and freedom of his own being. And he was constantly pointing out and inveighing against the attachments and the things that stop individuals from coming to realization. This is an act of great universal and constant compassion on his part. It was not that he was just a nasty old guy that would come and beat you. He did that a lot, of course. Or that he would shout at you. Or he would grab you and demand that you say something. It was all in the service of waking up out of the dream. The dream of what you think life is. So here he is. He says, among students who have come here from the four quarters, in the following he exaggerates a little bit, but he does it for the purpose of being starkly confrontative. So he says, among students who have come here from the four quarters, there has not been a single one who has not brought along with him an attachment to something or other. If this mountain monk, referring to himself, is able to recognize that object of attachment, he will beat it straight away. If they describe the object with their hands, I shall beat their hands. If they describe it with their mouth, I shall beat their mouth. If they describe it with their eyes, I shall beat them on the eyes. Now you have to understand that this is... He certainly was conscious of the delicacy of our human form. And so while he did hit people with his stick, this is a symbolic way of speaking here. When he says he'll beat them on the mouth, doesn't mean he'll break their teeth. Except symbolically, the teeth that grab onto things and chew everything up, thinking they're going to get some nutriment out of it. But rather it's pulling the rug out from under, as we might more benignly say, confronting directly. What do you hope to get by grabbing onto this? This is the beating, which sometimes will be a verbal one, sometimes a physical one. But because of this urgency to help people to awaken from this dream, this universally supported dream. My goodness, I heard the other day of a striking example, and it just, you think of the billions of people in the world. Some teenage girl had written in her computer her negative ideas about how she hated her father and so on and so on. The father found this on her computer. I don't know if you've encountered this on the internet. But what he did was he shot with his gun her computer 9 times. And then the statistics on YouTube are 25 million people watched this, have watched it. You know, 25 million hits. 25 million people watch that. For what purpose? Think of what this means for our mind. 25 million people, this is, and the guy shooting the computer, all that sort of stuff. Good thing he didn't shoot his daughter. But what happens as we walk down the street? As we engage ourselves with our life of every day, what happens? Watch those thoughts coming through the mind, the thoughts that are critical of everything, that would be shooting them, as it were. Stupid thing to do. What a jerk. Oh, that's such a tedious thing. It's happening again. God's the story of my life. This. And then the dwelling on them. The dwelling on them. And the calling back to them, making them arise in the mind. We go, oh, I remember that time. Oh, yes, this was so stupid. And we go off again. Minutes go by, hours perhaps, days in this precious life. Is there any difference? It is only that what that father did was more blatant and got through the grace of our current technological age to be broadcast throughout the world. I don't know who was there to film it, but that's another point, I guess. But anyhow, this is the life. This was an example of that life. This life is the substance of people who think that they are simply alone with their own thoughts. Millions and millions and millions of people with their own thoughts are covering themselves over with this capsule, are putting in front of their own eyes and their ears, their own senses, a veil, a covering, an obstruction, called something benign, like explanation. It is this that we have to observe. We have to watch this mind doing that kind of thing. Perhaps we say we are not that blatant as the father who shoots the computer. Perhaps we say we would not bother with such a thing on YouTube. We have more to do with our life than to entertain ourselves with these kinds of things. Don't be too arrogant. There's a certain humility required for actually finding out and practicing what the actual Zen practice is. The practice that leads to liberation. The liberation of our eyes, our ears, and all our senses. The liberation of our mind. So that it is not in the service of these puppeteers. Like this teenager that I referred to, who is benevolently learning this art of, he doesn't have to do anything. He said that to me several times. There's nothing I have to do. I don't have to manipulate it. I just have to note it and let it be. This anxiety that has been plaguing him for all his young years. Back to Rinzai. He says, until now, no one who has come has been able to prove that they have independence and freedom. They are all caught in traps which have been laid by the teachers of old. I myself do not have a single dharma to give you. All I can do is help cure your sickness and undo the knots that bind you. We're used to dealing with life as a domain of seeking. It used to be, and I'm sure it still is among many circles, a mark of, humanistic or spiritual maturity to say, I am a seeker. Ah, I know what that's like. I'm glad we came to that point. After all this life being buffeted around, now we're a seeker. One more, mere identification. You become professionals at it. Let me tell you about the workshop I was at last weekend, and so on and so on. The seeker. Presupposition behind being a seeker is you're not a finder. That there's something else out there for which you seek. It's the same old paradigm. It may have a content that is more prestigious. But it is the same thing. The pattern is the same. The structure of it is the same. This is the mind. We get so caught in content. We think some contents are good contents. Much better to be involved with the Dharma than it is to be involved with casino gambling. From one viewpoint, maybe that's true. From another viewpoint, it's the same structure of mind. It's the same trap. Just that in one of them, you lose a lot of money. The house always wins. And if you only look at it, it's the puppeteer that always wins. Unless. This is what Zen offers, the unless. Koyan Rinzai says, all you students who come from different places, try not to be dependent upon anything. I want to tell you something. For these last 15 years, I have not met a person. I have just met spirits who live in bamboo or wood or grasses and leaves. They are fox spirits who are gnawing in a disordered fashion on heaps of dung. They are truly a bunch of blind people. They just squander the offerings that are given to them by donors in all parts. They say, we are monks who have left the home life. Their insight is no richer than this. And there are many people in this world who become professionals. This is carrying on from what I said before, to become a seeker. That's admired in lots of places. But it's useless. It's the same kind of pattern. Unless, there's always an unless. Unless that seeking comes from really knowing that everything that you've tried to get, you've tried to resolve, you've tried to find, you've tried to read about, you've tried to, has done nothing for you, but just added to your accumulation of knowledge, which is a currency in the world. Buys you a lot of status. Oh yes, I know about that. I've been there. This sort of thing. Rinzai points out this is useless. If you really want to find out how to realize yourself, there's a whole different orientation. When you let things be, I would say some things that sound totally paradoxical, and for ordinary people, they would sound like nonsense. When you hear the crow, are you the crow? When you look at a tree, are you the tree? This sounds like nonsense. Why? Because we have an idea of a crow. We have an idea of the sound of a crow. If we're very sophisticated, we know all about the eighth word and the eighth nerve and the ossicles in the inner ear and all of that sort of stuff. The middle ear, sorry. And we think that's, that explanation is what it is. An explanation of the digestion of your food does not digest your food. An explanation of the operation of your heart does not beat blood through your body. Chewing on a menu that describes the great dish that this restaurant offers will nourish you. What does one have to do? One has to see through that with a certain humor, not violence, just a certain humor and intention. Old Master Zuigong, you've all heard of, 12th koan of the Mumon Khan, gets up every morning and says, "Master?" "Yes," he says. He says to himself, "Are you awake?" And after a significant pause, he says, "Yes, I am." Then he says to himself, "Don't be fooled today by anybody." "No, I will not." He goes off and does his day. We do not recognize the degree to which we are fooled constantly. We let it suffice that opening our eyes in the morning is being awake. Zen refers to another kind of awakeness. Awakeness from the coverings, the veils that we place over ourselves by our addictions to explanations and interpretations and naming and all the rest of it, all of which are very appropriate and very useful. They are not to be made an object of derision, of course not. It is their automaticity, the attachment process, this mysterious thing that we human beings, because we are fundamentally dualistic, that is to say, we have self-consciousness, we have to deal with. Do we have to go to another level of what it is to be a human being? Inherent in the being of everyone. Inherent. So, Rinzai goes on, he says, "What I want to tell you is that there is no Buddha, no Dharma, no practice, no realization. For some folks, it's important to point out there is Dharma. There is realization, so as to perhaps incite, perhaps awaken an orientation towards their life. It is temporary knowledge. It is true in the sense that, as all truth operates, is to end a question. To end a problem, to allow the stream to flow again, to move on, to remove obstructions to the flow of the stream, to be able to say, there is Dharma, awaken to it. There is a process of realizing this. If you're interested, I'll tell you something about Zazen. Then ultimately, and Rinzai is speaking ultimately you realize that when you speak of Dharma, you speak of Buddha, you speak of realization, you are creating an object different from everything else, because it is defined by a word. This is what words do. They define, they take a piece. Oh, they've already broken the world up. And they encompass it with certain words. It is this. Realization is this and not that. Dharma is this and not that. Buddha is this and not that. And that's the obstruction. That's why Rinzai says, being the benevolent being that he is, but the uncompromising being that he is, he says, there is no Buddha, there is no Dharma, there is no realization, no practice. So he says, what is it that you are looking for in other people? And there are some people who wander around the so-called spiritual world looking for something that matches something in their minds of what an enlightened person is, what enlightened behavior is. And they look for it, and they try to get a match. And when there's not a match, they walk away, not realizing that it is just the validation of some idea they have in their own mind that is not based upon their own experience of that very thing. It is a nothing. And yet it is what motivates them. I will only learn from someone who has that match. What would they do with some of the Zen masters who have lived beneath bridges among the poor? What would they do with someone who wears no fancy robes? Thich Nhat Hanh has a story somewhere of being approached by some official, and the official comes to the monastery, and Thich Nhat Hanh greets him, and Thich Nhat Hanh is just wearing his rough and ragged work clothes, and the man says he's looking for the Reverend Thich Nhat Hanh, and the Thich Nhat Hanh that he meets says, just wait a minute, I'll go get him. So he goes and changes into his fancy robes. And then he comes, and the person's so glad to have finally met Thich Nhat Hanh. This is the way it is. This is the way it is. We have to be mindful of that. Sometimes we miss food because we have an idea of what food is. So going on, he says, what is it that you're looking for in other people? What is it that you lack? This is a constant belief of people. They lack something. It's an understandable and applicable idea. If you lack the understanding of calculus, there's a way to remedy that. You take a course in calculus. You find the standards and you meet the standards as best you can. Thus, you deal with that lack. But in this world of Zen, it is a lack of something much more fundamental, a lack of our life itself, a lack of our freedom, a lack of our ability to be rooted in ourselves, no matter what we're doing. I say that with the realization that the words are all we have to speak with. So when I say rooted in ourselves, this is not to deny what I've said before or what Rinzai says. But there's a certain presence, a certain satisfactoriness, you might say, an okayness, a total sufficiency about every moment, simply because it is this moment, and that there could be nothing else at this moment. Ah, but that's an idea, isn't it? How do you make it not an idea? How do you make it the realization that walks you and breathes you and infuses you with what we call in Zen freedom? How is that done? This is the element of Zazen. The learning this art and science of dealing with what you have, what you have. Your karma is the richest place for you. You have everything you need in order to accomplish this realization. Everything. It is not to be found out there. It is not to be found in the fancy teachings or more and more practices given by somebody out there. It is to be found in how you deal with what you have at this very second, beyond all the designations and names of practices. How do you deal with it? There is only one practice, and as Dogen points out, that practice is enlightenment. What is the practice that is enlightenment? People lack something, they seek for it outside, but then they hear, you have it, it is within you. And that too is a lie. Because what do you do if it's within you? What do you search for and where? The fact of this matter is that this matter is neither within you nor outside you. And it is both within you and outside you. Because it has nothing to do with this distinction between you and it, or anything like that. It is absolutely outside of that silly world of making structures and ideas and strategies and so on. But how do you access it then? This is an ancient question. Joshu, great Zen master Joshu, asked his teacher Nanzen, well, how can I find it then if I don't seek for it? And Nanzen pointed out to him that the way is beyond seeking. How many people finally learn that breath is breath? As Mumon says in one of his verses, when you recognize that flame is fire, then you know that your meal has long been cooked. Oh, what does that mean? What does that mean? It is Zen teaching, this inviting you to stretch. Anybody knows that flame is fire. What's this business about a meal being cooked? Yes, the blind mind knows nothing of that. But the mind that at least is awakened to the possibility, that is able to hear in these words a pointing at something, a pointing. That is all these words can usefully do in the realm of Zen, is they can point. They cannot encompass. They cannot grasp it. That is why the Dharma cannot be given to you by anybody. But there can be a pointing, an inciting, an inspiring, that sort of thing. Going on, Rinzai says, do not be like blind people. It is as though you want to put another head on top of the head you already have. In other words, making up something about enlightenment and kind of trying to imitate it and grasp it and all the rest of it. My friends, he says, at this very moment, your own wonderful function is no different from the wonderful function of the masters and the Buddhas. It is only because you lack confidence that you are looking for something outside of you. Make no mistake, there is no Dharma outside of you for you to run after. There is no Dharma within to attain. It would be better to listen to my words, take a rest and practice and have nothing to do. If something has arisen, do not try to make it continue. If something has not arisen, do not try to make it arise. This action is more valuable than 10 years pilgrimage. Now, how many people can hear that? This book of Rinzai is entitled Nothing to Do, Nowhere to Go. Dangerous words, because if they are heard by the mind that because, oh, what a relief. Just hang out in the world, no problem. It's misunderstood because it's understood by the same set of machinery that has divided up the world and that makes it something to gain or not gain or let go of or whatever. But to the mind that is starting to awaken, those words are as gold. Something comes into your mind. Some sensation arises, some thought, some memory, some fantasy of the future. There's nothing to do with it. As Rinzai points out, don't do anything with it. Don't try to stop it from arising, and don't try to make it arise if it's not arisen. Just notice. As I say to people, you have a resident mind, and minds do that sort of thing. Just notice it. Don't bother with it. It has nothing to do with you. None of your business, as we say. Your mind and its contents are none of your business. Just notice them if you want to. Don't bother. The merest noticing, the not being any concern whatsoever with it, is just stuff. Like little sounds in the room, like little flashes of light, like whatever, nothing. So the mind we're seeking for is a mind that is empty, that has nothing in it, right? Nothing, just empty. What a boring place to be. You don't understand. You've not examined your very words. What is the presupposition behind boring? The presupposition is separation from something that is going to be an entertainment or something to do or something that within which you can place your life as a part of it, a place of giving it meaning. Zen demands that we look underneath everything. What am I really saying? What am I really doing? And underneath it you find enormous silence, a silence that is huge and vast, a silence within which everything arises without name, without form, a silence that is beyond birth and death, a silence where you can hear that crow, and it is you, where you can see that tree, and it is you. Place where you are totally free. And the marvel of breath comes in and goes out without your knowing the mechanism or without any intention. And when you walk without knowing anything at all but the countless neurons, muscles that are involved, and the manner in which your body is in relationship to what we call gravity and doesn't fall down ordinarily. But you walk. You walk. And you feel marvelously the floor beneath your feet. Just to walk upon the earth. We'll end there today.